What up, everybody? Double G for the Fight Game podcast. I'm back home, not in Arizona anymore, so no time differences. We're back in our normal spot, Thursday night, Friday morning, to talk about some wrestling. John LaRocca, what's going on?
It's going good, man. How are you? You're back. You're relaxed. It looks like you're at Dave's house still.
Yeah, my back. I'm going to have to go to Dave's house tomorrow. You've seen his Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen it. I don't get it still. Like, he's posting, but unable to, like, change his picture back and all that kind of stuff.
I think he just doesn't want to screw anything up. Like, he's got his account back. He doesn't want to dig into the settings. He's a little worried, so I'll fix it. I think I also need to figure out how to put on some 2-auth authentication. So in case someone's rummaging through his account, he'll get some emails and they will be forced to have some sort of code or whatever. And hopefully that'll protect him, because I don't know if you saw Aaron Solo, like, literally admitted to screwing with Dave's Twitter on QTV, man.
Yeah, I was trying to, like, save the upchuck out of my mouth, you know, as I'm watching the QTV segment.
Don't worry,
whatever the hell it is.
Yeah, it's getting buried on this show. I gave it the benefit of the doubt last week. I was like, you know, I don't really blame this on QT. Like, he's kind of been thrown into this thing. There was no real build for him to be a main event player, and they're giving him this opportunity, but this opportunity sucks. It might be the worst thing that they've done, if, you know,
in a long time
that I can remember.
Back to Dave is setting up his two level authenticity, whatever you're gonna do. Maybe three. Maybe you should get the code to your phone. You have to go and tell him the code. So,
Oh man, yeah. You know, maybe Monday's Wrestling Observer Radio. Or maybe it was over the weekend. Brian was like, oh, you know, you've had a break from Twitter, as if to say, like, you know, maybe don't get it back. Like, you might be happier without it. But Dave was like, nope, I'm getting it back. Yeah, so we'll figure that out. The Observer comes out, so I didn't want to bother him today. I'll probably have to figure out a way to get to his house tomorrow. All right, so what are we going to talk about today? First off, I interviewed Zach Haydorn, who writes for Pro Wrestling Torch. He put a book together on the artistry of Steve Austin. And we talked about Austin's career, why he decided to write the book. He's independent publishing, actually through Jonathan Snowden's Hybrid Shoot brand. So that'll be at the tail end of this podcast. Zach is a really nice guy. If you've ever followed him on social media, and, you know, I love it when people kind of just do their own thing here and are able to just say, hey, you know, I'm just going to publish this book, and I've been really thinking about it for the last few years. And he put it together, and it goes through Austin's WrestleMania. So that'll be at the end, after John and I go over all of our stuff. So you can tune in and link to, if you're interested in buying Zach's book, it'll be in the show notes. All right. Another little piece of business here is the F4W convention. We are a little over 2 months away from Double or Nothing and the convention. And I just wanted to mention where you can find all of the information: f4wonline.com/Vegas. You can buy tickets to the Brian and Dave Q&A, which is, I believe, on Saturday. I think Dave's a little worried that they're going head to head with the WWE show on that day. That is at 10 a.m. Actually, the meet and greet's at 10 a.m. The Q&A is at 11. And then Ed in San Antonio's Poder Cinco show is from 12 to 2. And then also later that evening, 9 p.m., is the Sweet Party, which is kind of like my favorite thing, when you just get to, like, meet up with all the people who are at the convention and shoot the stuff and meet people and hear people saying, oh, you know, I remember you from this thing. And then it's a fun time. Sunday is the brunch, and also AEW Double or Nothing. There is an option to buy an AEW ticket if you do not have one through the website. So check that out. I will be there. My wife will be there. Still wondering why she agreed to come this time, but lots of people are coming from what I can tell. It's going to be a fun time. Dave and Brian as well. And maybe you get to meet the big boss, Tony the Leader. The guy with the giant beard walking around.
The man with the plan.
All right, last thing before we actually get into our thumbs up, thumbs down. I just quickly wanted to make mention Kid Zombie. People know him as Kid Zombie. Recently passed away. And I just thought he was the nicest dude whenever I would see him. And usually at APW shows,
yep,
he would always walk up to me, say, what's up, shoot the stuff for 5 minutes, and then just, you know, go back to doing what he was doing. And he's such a fan of independent wrestling in the Bay Area. Really just like that was kind of his deal. And I know he was also, you know, back in the day, like if anybody needed access to some match that, you know, everyone loved, but just wasn't easily accessible, like he knew a guy who could do a DVD and help you find, like, just that kind of stuff. And when I heard about his passing, actually through Marcus Mack's Instagram, yep, is how I found out. I was just bummed, man, because, you know, that guy, not very old at all. Like, you know, that's not supposed to happen. And so I was just heartbroken when I saw that. And not that he and I shared anything other than what's up at wrestling shows and some stuff on Twitter. But man, I was really bummed out. And I just wanted to say that I really thought fondly of him as this super nice guy wrestling fan that you just would see at shows.
Yeah, Matt was a really good fan of independent wrestling, big supporter of independent wrestling. I met him back in 1997 at APW. At that time, I was just volunteering, you know, at APW, and Matt Mann and his brother, and I forget his brother's name, they also started volunteer, offered their services. At the time, you know, Jim Wars was getting a little underground reputation. And I believe him and his brother actually made the first Jim Moore's t-shirts.
Oh, wow.
So I used to have one of those a long time ago. I'm sure it's packed away somewhere. You know, he was there for a while. And then, you know, then I started seeing him at, you know, back at shows. And I think on Facebook, you know, when Facebook happened, saw him on there. And I know he did some podcasting himself. I believe he had a show or something as well. And yeah, he's just always at shows, brought his signs, yelled, screamed, and cheered. And, you know, he's a good guy. So yeah, he's definitely going to be missed in this, definitely in the Bay Area wrestling community.
I wish all of his friends and family well, keeping all of you in our thoughts. And, you know, always just have fond memories of, like, I would get random tweets about, you got to bring Dave to this show. Such and such is wrestling. It's, yeah, you know, and, you know, it's so hard for us to get out on, you know, Friday nights or whatever. We're doing shows and stuff. But, it, you know, without fail, if he thought there was a big match that, you know, maybe could put a little shine on the promotion, hey, why not invite the guy who writes about it, right?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, you know, I just always loved that. He would just, you know, shoot me and Dave notes. Got to show it, you know, Daniel Garcia is wrestling at West Coast Pro or whatever. You got to come through. And
yeah,
like, oh, yeah, you know, it'd be great to go see that. So anyways, moving on. It's time for our segment in which we choose one thing that we decide to give a thumbs up to and one thing that we decide to give a thumbs down to.
Thumbs up, thumbs down.
All right. I want you to go first here with your thumbs up, because I want you to go first, because I'm not sure if you're going to agree necessarily with my thumbs up, but I really want your feedback on my thumbs up. So why don't you go first and then I'll go second.
My thumbs up is going to be for AEW, for AEW's house show, not specifically the one they had, but the one coming up in Canada. I thought doing it with the the Stampede Festival, just like WWE did with Canadian Stampede. I think it's a smart move. I think it's a smart strategic move to do it around that time. A lot of people in town, big celebration. I like that move. So I have big thumbs up to Tony Khan for eyeing that date and trying to do a show during that time.
I sense that is something that you probably thought at some point, like, oh, it'd be really cool to run a show that weekend there in that that time, you know, because you always would think about stuff like that. You know, if you ever had the book on something or you were a promoter on something, oh, that's where I would run, because that just makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And I hope and I heard it might be now a televised event or something. Someone was mentioning that a Saturday. And then the rumor is maybe it might be that new shirt, the third show that's been talked about. And so, I mean, I hope that he delivers with the matches, but I'm sure that's going to be a really lively crowd for television. And
yeah, and this is not my thumbs up, but you know, my partner on We're Live Pal, Andrew Zarian, he had that first, as far as I've seen, about this weekend show. And the cute little hook to that is I don't know if he thinks that this is going to happen, or maybe he just thought like, oh, it would be kind of cute if they did it at 6:05 on Saturdays on TBS or TNT, but just the timing, you know, of that historic TV slot.
Yeah. Yeah. And we'll have to break all that down once that gets officially announced. And it's going to be interesting. I mean, to sustain three shows right now, you know, Rampage is just, you know, kind of hangs on there. And so we'll see what they can do, if they can make it unique, something a little different, a little tweak to it. So it's, you want to check out, or if it's just gonna be a bunch of squash matches for an hour, I don't know. You know, might skip that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you're actually selling tickets to this thing, I feel like you have to have some marquee stuff, but it doesn't have to be Dynamite, right? Like, you can't expect it to be Dynamite. Dynamite is, you know, it's just like WWE. They couldn't do, you know, two Monday Night Raws every week. Like, you got one and you're just like, okay, Sunday Night Heat, you know, we tried for an hour, but now this is what Sunday Night Heat is, because it's too hard.
They tried it. Well, with everything, like anything, like just a Rampage, they're going to put their best foot forward to start it off, right? And then, but eventually it's tough to keep up. Look at all wrestling history. Look at WCW Nitro and WCW Thunder, right?
Yeah,
Thunder was such a priority when it first happened. I think Eric Bischoff, did he not want Thunder at one point? He was a little worried about it, and sure enough, it you know, we started getting some really bad matches and throwaway matches on Thunder within like a year and a half, I think.
All right, my thumbs up. My thumbs up is somebody who earlier this year had a match of the year at the Tokyo Dome, and was someone that I earmarked as like, okay, the trio stuff is nice and it's fine, but you're a main eventer. You're the guy who should be, who should be facing MJF for the title. His name's Kenny Omega. He had the match with Will Ospreay, and I think my big worry with that match was to see if he could be the same Kenny Omega that he was previously in Japan, with Okada having those great matches, and just that mystique, because there was a mystique around him as a wrestler back then. You know, his AEW run was fine, but it wasn't the same guy. It was a different version of Kenny Omega, even though, to him, if you asked him, he sort of thought like, yeah, it was sort of the same character. To me, it was not. So now we fast forward. We've seen the trios titles, and we've talked about those matches, how a lot of the AEW fan base really loved those trios matches with the Lucha Brothers, and us, not so much. I liked specifically, I thought the pay-per-view one was good, and there was one other one that I liked, but for the rest of the five, I was like, oh, they're just kind of the same match. They're trying to figure out different ways to do the same thing. So now there's been a little, with them losing the trios titles, there's been a little bit of a break in, oh, is Kenny Omega possibly going to be a single again? Because you even had this on your podcast when the scuttlebutt was around, you know, if Kenny Omega is going to go WWE or whatever. And you were saying how, like, they need him. And so we have this match with Vikingo, and Tony Khan advertises it on his Twitter as a dream match. And there was scuttlebutt about that. How could this be a dream match if a lot of people don't know who Vikingo is? Tony Khan is very smart about this kind of stuff, right? He's like he understands Twitter and what people are searching for and how people are going to retweet it and how it's the Howard Stern effect, which is the people who listened to Howard or the people who loved Howard back in the day, they listened to 45 minutes, and the people who hated Howard back in the day, they listened to him for an hour. It's the same thing on Twitter. Tony knows the people who are the naysayers are going to have just as much discourse about a tweet that he writes as the AEW hardcore fans. So he writes, Kenny Omega, Vikingo, dream match on Dynamite. And initially, I was like, man, I wish they could have promoted it for a week at least. But then I realized, I was like, okay, this probably was dropped on him at the last minute. And who knows if he's going to get Vikingo again. So he's just got to go with the match now. He's got to promote it as hard as he can. There was stuff on Rampage. There's been stuff on social. And the thread to Dynamite on Wednesday was kind of about this match. Like, you saw different segments with Kenny Omega talking about this match. There was a video package talking about this match. Now, the match with Vikingo, which we'll get into, I thought there were just spectacular stuff, athleticism. I've seen Vikingo stuff. I don't remember if I'd seen an entire match of his, but he came across to me as like someone who's really likable and someone who I think probably will be back at some point. But ultimately, to me, this was about Omega, because he is the guy that I think can be a little bit more of a transcendent guy than he's been used as so far. Like, I really wanted, coming like in the beginning of AEW, I wanted him to get a babyface run with that title and see where he could take it, see where his different personality, his unique personality, his unique style of wrestling, where can that sort of separate from what we see from WWE? They did Jericho, then they went to Omega, then they went to Moxley, so he had a shot, but he didn't have the shot that I wanted him to have. And so he has this match with Vikingo, well-received. There's a couple things I didn't like about it, but ultimately I thought it was really great stuff. And what it told me, and this is kind of, again, the Dynamite, what Dynamite was really about, is that I think we're getting the singles version of Kenny Omega back, which excites me. I don't know if he's going to be the guy to beat MJF, but if I'm reading the tea leaves correctly, it may take a long while to get there. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to finally see the version of Kenny Omega, or at least close to the version of Kenny Omega that I've always wanted to see in AEW. So he's my thumbs up. I think, like, he can't do that match on Dynamite every month. Like, he needs to chill out a little bit, because that was nuts. But that is closer to the version of Kenny Omega that I want to see, especially in the title picture.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how he even came out of that match. I'm sure he had to come out of that match with something.
Yeah.
You know, there's a few things that, well, I mean, more than a few things, but yeah, they need him as a singles. They need him as a top babyface. I think that's where they're going with that, from what we saw at the end of the show, and Don Callis' involvement playing the mind games. I think eventually we'll see him, you know, as a top singles. They need that. They need that top single star. I don't think they have that right now. I mean, look who the world champion has to compete against. You know, two guys who aren't there and one guy that's, you know, nearly there, but could be higher up, in my opinion. But we'll see how it goes. So, yeah, I think this summer, or just next half of the year, is going to be very important for Kenny Omega and AEW. So that's if he resigns, right? I assume he did, though. Or I guess it got extended because of injury time. But I'm pretty sure he's going to sign with AEW. I can't see him. I just can't see him as a fit in WWE. But you never know, you know.
I mean, I think he could be a fit, but it would be a different version of who he probably thinks is closer to who he wants to be. But that's everything, right? That's You know, in WWE, you are a character. You are who they want you to be, who they pay you to be. And sometimes, you know, I think with Cody, like, we've seen a better version of the AEW character in Cody Rhodes. Like, he is much better in his current WWE role, I think, than he ever was in AEW.
Yeah.
So it could work out for the better in that way.
Yeah, I think definitely. Yeah, I think they might. I think WWE might be some of the best out of Kenny. Maybe kind of rein back on some of the negatives that kind of creep into it, the goofiness that he wants to do. Because when he's serious and focused, and, you know, he's definitely one of the best. But when the goofiness kind of comes out of him, it just kind of takes for me, at least. I just kind of like, takes me out of it when I watch his matches. But we'll see. We'll see. But yeah, big year. It should be a big year for Kenny Omega and AEW. I'm just worried that this Elite stuff, the CW stuff with Hangman and all that stuff, will kind of put MGF on a second level, and the focus of the show is going to be on the Elite, you know, going forward, which I don't know. That's a good thing.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in our big picture segment for sure. All right, what about thumbs down?
Thumbs down. I'm not trying to single out NXT, but TakeOver coming up, which looks like a pretty good card overall. You know,
is this Braun and Carmelo?
Yeah, Braun and Carmelo is the main event. It's just, again, a multi-person ladder match, right? With the ladies for the vacant title. Multi-person North American Championship match. I mean, all those guys in that match are just phenomenal, though. Like, it's going to be a barn burner of a match. It's just, I just missed builds to one-on-one big matches, you know? And for multiple men or multiple women matches, like, that's what tag team matches are for, right? Like, make me want to see those tag team matches. And you know, I'm sure it'll be well worked on and you know, laid out. Like, I just kind of nervous about those women being in that position. A lot of them are very green, and you know, I worry about that match. But and it's not just NXT; it's like everywhere. Like, I just was looking at. I see some of the matches for Supercard Honor being out there, right? And I don't know. This match has already been announced, like, I think a couple weeks ago. But, you know, Mark Briscoe vacates the ROH tag team titles. Now we have a multi tag team ladder match. You know, and like, I'm just like, ladder matched out, you know.
Yeah,
and
totally.
And I'm bringing up NXT because it just seems like they always go to the ladder match a lot.
Yeah,
in this promotion or in that on that brand. So I'm kind of calling them out there. I just got to kick back. And we just saw, I was there live to see a multi man ladder match right at the Cow Palace or AEW. So you know, I think Stand Deliver is more focused on in ring than ever before. It's been a while since we've seen like a NXT takeover, which is really, you know, in ring focus. I think Stand Deliver coming up has that potential in many of the matches, you know, so I think it's going to be a good show. I just like, you know, I just, you know, when I see ladder matches and multi-man elimination, I don't think it's an elimination match. I hope it is the six-way title. I mean, a lot of people are in there, great, but still, it's like multi.
I'm supposed to be on The Wrap this weekend with Keelan Scott previewing WrestleMania and NXT, and I've no idea about any, because I haven't watched any NXT, so I may just sit that one out and go, okay, you guys need to tell me, as a fan who's not watching, like, why is any of this interesting? Because, but I heard the JD McDonagh match was really good this weekend.
Yeah, Ilya and JD McDonagh. Yeah, I heard that. I was told to watch that match. I mean, those guys,
I heard, just the finish sucked, though. That's all.
Well, it's leading to the, you know, multi-man match, you know. They're those guys are just unbelievable. So yeah, I'm sure it was a great match. I'm sure, like I said, the six-way is gonna be good, but it's just, I'm like, man, why? I wish it was Wesley versus, you know, wrestler X, and they have a big build to that match. I understand, big show. They only do a couple a year. You want to try to fit everyone on it, but, you know, sometimes you just can't fit everyone on it. So
yeah, yeah. All right, my thumbs down is all the people, whoever is involved in putting QTV together, and some of the blame goes to the campiness of the acting and stuff. So I'm going to relate this to something that people would never relate this segment to, but it's just what it reminded me of, because on my trip back home from Tucson, so the 13 and a half hour drive or whatever home, I was looking for some podcasts to listen to, and I downloaded the Wondery app, and the Wondery app has a lot of true crime podcasts. And I just paid the monthly, so I didn't have to listen to commercials. And I started digging in, and I was listening to a podcast called Suspect, which was really good. And then I started digging around and seeing, you know, what do they got? And I saw the Wonderland Murders. And I'd heard about this story before, but I never really paid a lot of attention to it. People may know it as the John Holmes, the porn star John Holmes, like he's involved in this crazy story. And so I listened to the podcast. I was like, wow, this is a fascinating story. Val Kilmer was in a movie about this story in 2003 called Wonderland. Kate Bosworth was also in it. She's like really young at that time. And so as the story goes, it's basically a drug kind of crime, and where it's like faction versus faction, and they're like killing each other and stuff. And the faction that, and John Holmes is kind of in the middle of this whole story. He goes back and forth. And so when the faction goes and beats up the drug boss, they are so stupid in bragging about this hit, knowing that this dude, they didn't kill him, so this dude's going to be back and he's going to go after him. And they're just stupid. They're just like, you know, calling people, bragging about it. They didn't even leave. They planned to leave like a couple days later, but then they were all high and they decided to stay longer. And so that's what the stupid QTV thing reminded me of, because you have these idiots admitting to a bunch of crimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you're on TV, dude. Like, you just admit it. Like, and so I'm watching, you know, Wonderland and listening to podcasts going like, oh, these guys are so stupid. Not that I wanted them to get away with it. And this is history, right? This is like 1981. But I'm just like, oh, these guys are so stupid. Like, what are they doing? And I'm watching QTV going like, these guys are so stupid. What are they doing? And I don't like just outright hating something for the sake of hating it, but I've also seen from the hardcore AEW fans, they're just not digging it as well. And that's a sign. If the hardcore fans are not digging and they like, you know, most of what AEW does, man, that's a sign that they need to really, really just hit the eject button on this and just not even reference it. Let's forget about it. Let's change it up.
Cancel.
You have the possibility with Will Hobbs to reinvent something, to pivot. The fans are behind him. Let's just wash our hands with this and pretend it never happened.
Yeah, but I think the worst crime of it all on that show is the fact that, who are we pushing here? Is this a vehicle just to get QT Marshall over, who hasn't meant nothing? And you got poor Hobbs, who just won the TNT title. He has a this guy is on Dynamite getting airtime for QTTV.
Hobbs wrestles on Rampage.
Hobbs is on Rampage.
Rampage, right? Which was on Friday night at midnight and is now on Saturday because of the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, so, I mean, Hobbs should be defending that title I guess because he's a TNT champion, that's why he's on Rampage, right? Yeah. Is that the idea? But he needs to be featured more in a serious way on Dynamite. Maybe split up his title defenses. Maybe you do one on Dynamite, one on Rampage. But it's just, I'm just sitting there watching the segment. I'm like, well, where's Will, right? Where's Will in this segment? He's not there. So this whole time, you're just wasting it on this guy, on this guy that no one's cared about. You know, they cared about him maybe like early on when he was like, hey, who's this guy we don't really know that's a decent wrestler and he's teaming with Dustin Rhodes and they're having some fun tag team matches. I mean, Cody couldn't make anyone care about this guy. And he hasn't done anything for years. The factory's been a bunch of job guys, you know, like, it's just, I don't get it. I mean, I guess Tony must get a kick out of it, and that's why he likes it. So,
yeah, you do things for friends, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm just, you know, favorite thing would be all of a sudden QT comes out and Hobbs just powerbombs this dude through the table and we don't see him for a while. I'd be very happy with that. All right, let's talk about the rest of the stuff that happened on Dynamite with our big picture segment.
The big picture.
All right, let's get the big focus of Dynamite. Let's start with that, which was this Kenny Omega match with Vikingo. It was insane, is how I would describe it.
Yes.
Vikingo be even more insane than some of these other guys. Like, Phoenix is pretty insane with the crazy stuff that he does, but Vikingo's even doing like crazier stuff that I, like, my brain wasn't even imagining some of the stuff he was doing. I was like, okay, so he's gonna like jump off of here and then hit the bottom rope on the other side and flip and do, and so it was nuts. Now, the reason why this is the John LaRocca Invitational match of the week is because of all of the crazy stuff. And I know one of your things about matches like this is, do they want to win the match? Are you there to win the match? It does, and but also for me is, does this stuff look like it actually hurts the other person, right? Does it, like, sometimes you'll see dives and it'll just be like a two-hand shove. And I thought the power high flying of Vikingo worked. I thought Omega selling the abdomen worked. I thought Vikingo selling it was pretty good.
Yeah, I'm sure that was not much selling.
With Omega, you're saying?
Oh, shit. How many times did Vikingo just land on him recklessly? Like,
Yeah. But I guess, I guess that was part of what I liked about it. If I could, like, not think about the health and the well care of the wrestlers, because there was also one of my least favorite moves, which was the poison Rana.
Yeah.
I thought the athleticism and the power and the moves in a way made me feel like this wasn't just an exhibition, and it made me feel like there was some substance there. And I don't always feel that way. Now, the one thing I want to nitpick on, and this is a nitpick, because they had set up this table spot very early in the match. And when they actually got there, the table was so far, it was too far high. So Omega had to kind of scoot towards the table so that he was able to get there. That was, you know, that was a miss in a match, and I could see taking some people out of it. It's like, Kenny Omega's got to scoot his butt over so he can lay on this table and so he can go through this table. That's the only thing that I really, really disliked. But otherwise, I thought this stuff was, I thought this was really good stuff, and it made me want to see Vikingo again. Now, how does he differentiate from Rey Fénix and from Commander and from guys like that? That's also a little bit hard, because when you have a lot of high flyers and a lot of luchadors on the roster, it's really hard to stand out from the others. But man, for a one-time performance and for Omega selling for him like he did, or in your words, realistically having to sell for some of that stuff, I just thought it was a really good segment, and it did a good rating as well. So whatever Tony did worked for that one week, and it looks like Vikingo is going to be on the ROH pay-per-view Supercard of Honor against Commander as well.
Oh, yeah, that should be a classic. I thought this match was, I described it to someone today, it's like an action movie that you can't explain a story of it, but it has a lot of action. And that's basically what the match
is. I was thinking like Marvel superhero wrestling match was kind of the thing that kept going in my mind, is like superhero movie in a ring, and it's not that realistic, but at the same time, you just want to see what happens next, because it's action-packed, like you said.
I didn't understand why. I know why they did it, but at first, it for the psychology of the match, like, why is Vikingo, who comes as a babyface, Omega has been a babyface since he got back. Why is he jump-starting this match with a dive out, you know? But I realized Vikingo, very great athlete. He's a risk taker. He's kind of like the, after it was over, I thought, you know what? He's kind of the modern day Sabu.
Mm.
Does a bunch of crazy stuff. The difference is, I didn't see much charisma out of this guy. Sabu stood out because, one, no one was doing it at the time. Plus, he was a wild man. He was crazy. He felt he was nuts and unpredictable. And that's why he's just throwing his body, he's doing more damage to his body just to hurt his opponent, right? I realized why they did it, because I don't think Vikingo can wrestle, right? He's not a guy that's going to do a hold. I don't know if he can even apply a hold, because there wasn't one hold in this match. But that's the plan. They want to just be all action from bell to bell, right? Some of the stuff, like, he would do some amazing flying stuff he needs to cut out, like, where he has to go to the top rope and stand there for like 30 seconds to get his footing while Kenny Omega has to look up with his hands open, waiting for him to catch him. Stuff like that. That's just bad. You know, I don't even think just stuff. When I see stuff like that, I can't even say it's a great match. Cause like that's sorely poorly executed there. Just looks bad. The power bomb at the top rope reversed to the Hurricanrana. I was trying to figure out what went wrong there. Either Kenny held too long or Vikingo held too tightly with his legs, you know. How's Kenny survived that? I just never knows. Maybe one of those miracle things that just, you know. And stuff like this he needs to cut out too, like standing on the middle rope looking out to the fans and doing a tumbleweed into the ring and just landing right on Omega's stomach. Like, Omega's selling the ribs because, fuck, he hurt his ribs, man. Like, the wind was knocked out of him. Another point, he landed on his head. Omega's head. I'm like, God, you know, Omega is so important to this promotion. I hope he doesn't get hurt at this match, right? Because he's out for such a long time with all his various injuries before. So, but I think in the end, this is promoted as a dream match. And at the end, it wasn't treated as such. Because at the end, I thought, okay, Kenny's going to put over Vikingo, raise his arm. You know, it's going to be a moment, right? They're going to have, please come back, all that shit. But they go right to this promo with Tony Schiavone and Kenny Omega, right? Vikingo's lying on the mat, just dead. No one's getting him out of the ring. No one's doing anything. Then they go to the angle with Hangman Adam Page, Don Callis, the Blackpool Combat Club. And just like that, we forgot all about Vikingo, right? It's like they went doing something else.
The way that I would look at that is I thought the post-match was too cheesy, and I wanted to forget about the post-match. All I wanted to think about was the match, because the post-match was so cheesy.
But I'm just saying, like, they just overshadowed, right, with the stuff. Now Don Callis stuff. What they should have done is have Vikingo at least make a save of sorts, right? Maybe kind of get Yuta or get Claudio, you know, maybe then he gets overwhelmed by the 3-on-1, right? You know, and that's what happens to him. At least do something instead of just, you know, just selling the whole time and slowly walking behind the guardrail. You see him just kind of walking off.
Yeah, they should have got him out of there so no one would see him again in that moment if they weren't going to do anything else. Or Blackpool Combat Club should have just started attacking him. Mm-hmm. Like, because at least then there would be a reason for him to be, he was just in a crazy match. Of course they're going to beat him up. He can't fight back. He was just in a crazy match. These guys are bad guys.
Either someone forgot, like the referee forgot to, like, hey, make sure you get Vikingo out of there, you know, after the match, because we're going to do this thing, you know, with them. Or maybe no one even thought about, well, where's Vikingo after this? Are we doing a handshake? Are we going to replay? Like, what's happening? So And that's the, you know, the experience of, you know, Tony Khan. But that producer guy they got should kind of like figure that out too, you know, from WWE, I would, you know, would think. But yeah, I at the end, I was like, wait a second. We just had this dream match and now we're just running this stuff. And I have a lot to talk about that as well. But yeah, it was, you know, I think he made a statement. I think people want to see him back. But like you said, you made a great point. What happens? How does he stand out over Ray Phoenix?
Yep.
Commander. Or he
that's
he
my that's new, my biggest worry about that.
Dante
stuff.
Martin, right? Like, or he's just a new flyer of the month, right?
Or when you bring in someone who's similar to other wrestlers, you kind of put him at the top and everyone else falls down a peg.
Mm-hmm.
What is there is probably an answer to this question. I don't know what the answer is, but where in the hell is Bandido? Like, I don't like we haven't
he's
seen
hurt,
him
right?
Is that what it is? Is he hurt?
I think he's hurt.
But so yeah, so Bandido, that I mean that's a reason for him to be out. But then, you know, you have all these guys and you just put them down a peg and it's like, oh, Dante Martin went from number four to number five. Well, we got to get him back on TV. So he goes to number one and then everyone else goes down a peg. And it just seems like there's this weird revolution of, you know, how do we keep everybody hot versus we only really, really want one or two of these guys hot, because if we try with everyone, nobody's hot. So,
well, as we've seen through Tony Khan's booking, he gets very excited about someone. A Ray Phoenix, a Dante Martin, right? Who's after Dante Martin? Oh, the Daniel Garcias, the Wheel Eaters of the world. And you start seeing him every week and week. I don't know about Vikingo because he's contracted to AAA, right? He's So maybe he will just be a special attraction because he's going to be in town this weekend, you know, for the WrestleMania, and he'll be involved in that Supercard of Honor show. So I guess that's a make good for, I don't know. Well, we'll talk about that next week. But I think we'll see more of him, but I think you got to use him as a special attraction. Then
100%.
If you throw him on a weekly basis, we're just gonna get tired of him. Yeah.
And he's also a guy, if you're going to use him, he should win these matches, because losing to Omega, I get it. It's fine. They'll probably do a rematch in Mexico at some point. He'll probably get his win back over Omega maybe, but he is so spectacular. He should be a special attraction, you know, maybe on special shows where you fly him in. And he should win, because what happens is same thing with Phoenix, same thing with Penta. These guys lose way too much now to where when it is time to put them in a match with Will Hobbs, you're like, oh, they're just going to lose. Like, great. They'll do some great moves, but they're going to lose. And so you want the ability to be able to use a Phoenix as a marquee to help put somebody over. But ultimately, because he's lost so many matches, he can't really be the guy for Will to get something from, because it's just expected that Will's going to beat him.
And plus, you know, Ray Phoenix and Pentagon have both been in tag team matches for so long, right? And they've been stuck in those six-man tag team matches for so long. Just doing Ray Phoenix versus Power Hobbs means nothing, because Ray Phoenix hasn't done any singles matches to kind of build himself up for that spot, right?
Except does a great match with Nick Jackson that everyone loves.
And that was what?
And
4 years ago?
But then they don't follow up on it, right? Then they just go back to what they were doing. It's like, oh, we're going to give you this special match. But then he's just going to go back to doing what he was doing before. Like, that's just kind of the thing. And I get it. Like, Tony has to do this because he's got this show to promote every week and he wants to pop quarters and stuff. And I get that part of it. Like, that, there's no, I'm not criticizing that part, but it's then these losses add up. And I think sometimes these guys aren't as special as maybe Tony still thinks that they are, because of knowing they're going to have a great match. It's like, yeah, they're going to have a great match, but they also lose in all those great matches. So it kind of gives it away a little bit for me.
I need to ask my guy, Paul Fontaine, because about the quarter breakdown. I'm interested to see what the Omega Vikingo match did. Right,
I think it was the
did it get top, a million,
or it may not have been the top segment, But I think that the second hour, there was something with the second hour. Dave tweeted something. I'll find Paul's write up on it. And we can talk about it a little bit. But let's talk about, you know, the thing that we didn't mention, and the reason why I didn't mention it, but we may as well mention it here. The CM Punk discourse. Have you seen all that stuff today?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
I hope. Actually, I'm not sure if I hope, but I wonder if Dave's going to write a little bit about it, because he knows more about that story than anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if Punk necessarily wants Dave to write that story. He kind of created an opportunity of putting it in the news to where Dave may have to write about it. And I don't know. I don't know if he will. But anyways, I want to mention that we're not going to talk about it here. If something comes out, I'm sure Dave will talk about it in the Observer and on Wrestling Observer Radio tomorrow or later today with he and I. But I just wanted to mention that because people are probably thinking like, gosh, this is the biggest story of the whole week and these guys didn't talk about it. Okay. Dynamite averaged 954,000 viewers, up 12% from last week. And they did a 0.33 in the 18 to 49. And that is a big leap from last week. Obviously, I think people understand that the competition was a little lesser this week, but still, you know, they still had to go up against NBA and Vanderpump Rules. And so I don't think Paul has the quarter breakdowns here. Mm-hmm. So this might be something I also have to talk to Big Dave about tomorrow if he has them.
I'm sure Dave will have them tomorrow, but or I'm sure I'll have these in my mailbox by my message box by tomorrow morning for the ace Paul Fontaine.
Yeah,
I was just curious because it's the flow of the show is really interesting. Last week was very interesting, like just this huge drop at the second hour, just completely plummeted. Was interesting last week, so we'll see. We'll see. I know Brandon Thurston does a great job of putting that stuff up as well. You know.
Yeah, I'll keep looking. If I can find Brandon Thurston's stuff, I will let you know as we talk about this. All right. So let's talk about the CW drama portion of this show. Now, it is, if you are going to do this stuff, we are 2 months away, a little bit over 2 months away from the pay-per-view. So doing it now is fine if this is where you're going. The one thing about it that I don't like, and look, you know, this is a WWE angle that we've seen millions of times. Like someone goes away in an ambulance and then the hero comes back in the ambulance and just outsmarts everybody. All that. That's just what we've seen time after time again. My worry about this stuff is they don't take the time to get a great take sometimes. Sometimes I'm watching this stuff and I go, they're like the Ricky Starks promo. I was like, there had to be a take two there somewhere where he could do that promo a little bit better because he was a little flat and he was kind of losing himself a little bit.
He's probably annoyed why he's did a few with Juice Robinson after coming out of it with Jericho. He should be in the world title match, not
exactly
feuding with Juice Robinson.
So we get the show starting with the Bucks going in the ambulance, and Omega is over the top. Omega, you know, he's like really scared for his friends, and Don Callis is being the con man that he was. What was the emotion Hangman was supposed to show us in this?
Does he show emotion? I guess sometimes he does, but I didn't understand the editing of this. It looked weird. Like, first of all, he's at one ambulance talking to Brandon Cutler. He's with Matt Jackson. And then they cut to Omega with Nick Jackson on a gurney, on a stretcher, going into the second ambulance. But literally, Paige is still there. Like, it was like a double. Like, they didn't show, like, the second ambulance, like, in front of the other. So it just looked awkward with that edit there.
So if Hangman is kind of the protagonist that we are seeing through this lens of what is going on. He's probably not the right pick because there's no real emotion there. You can't tell if he's scared for his friends. Like, you could tell Omega is something because Omega's just over the top in his in the way he emotes. But Hangman, is he's trying to play it cool. I wasn't really sure what he was supposed to do there. The feeling that he was supposed to show us, because he didn't really give us anything. And we'll fast forward to the end here. This is a show long storyline. We'll go back after this part, but the end of this show is, again, it is very similar to something WWE has done millions of times, in that the bad guys come out to attack the wrestlers at the end of the show. And with perfect timing, Hangman must have been watching Dynamite on his iPhone through his Hulu app because he comes at the right time to run the heels off, so much so that the ambulance sirens get piped in through the audio, right? Like, he's got it all figured out. Except there was no climax to him going, like, telling the audience, I am the hero here. I am the guy who is here to save the day. These are the bad guys. I'm going to beat up the bad guys because I am the hero in this moment. Unless I missed something, like, he just comes out of the ambulance, he's swinging this club, runs those guys off, and then they go into the drama that you were talking about with Omega, you know, kind of like sitting there and Callis pretending like Hangman hit him and falling, and Omega getting mad at Hangman. Like, that is, you know, the overacting of that stuff is what it. I didn't like that at all. But my criticism, or the thing that I wanted to really work, I wanted Hangman to have his Stone Cold Steve Austin moment, and you can even give me the Kurt Angle on the milk truck moment, and Hangman was like, if those were tens, Hangman's like a 2.5 in this thing, as far as emoting the idea that he's this ass kicking hero and he's here to save the day.
Yes. I think a lot of this issue with this segment is the execution. I think Tony saw those Sting, Rick Rude, Clash Champions, November 1991, right?
Yes.
Hulk Hogan, Clash Champions, August of 94, Ric Flair, right? Coming back. And as you mentioned, Stone Cold and Kurt Angle and others have done it. The problem is with Tony, like, he sees this idea and sees this great angle, and that Rick Rude Sting one was awesome. But what made it work, and what made it so, like, is he gonna come back, is there's someone on site. They're going to it on multiple segments. How are they doing? Is he gonna come back? Or, you know, in this case, the Bucks, what's going on, right? But thing is, here's the thing. It was Sting that was hurt that came back. It was Hulk Hogan that was hurt that came back. The Bucks didn't come back. Paige is just there. You can come back anytime, dude. They're in the care of medical staff, right? They're at a freaking hospital, right? And why? And here's another funny one. Why in 2023 are you still in the ambulance to get back? You don't have Uber on your phone. Sting didn't have Uber in 1991, right? He could have called a cab, but, you know, he was banged up. He's probably still in the ambulance. He said, screw it, I'm going to make my way back there, right?
Yeah.
So the execution of this was all wrong.
It's a great point in that he didn't have any of the he wasn't the one who got beat up to come back from. So he's just a random dude who's mad because his friend got hurt, and then just decides at the end of the show to come back and fight off the bad guys. But the crowd, they didn't have the sympathy for him. They had the sympathy for the Bucks.
Exactly.
So, yeah, no, it's a great point. And yeah, it's with, you know, AEW, they don't have the WWE budget for stuff like this. I don't think they need it necessarily, because they can just do it smart and make sure that things like this work. But I just thought it was super hokey to just drive it in the ambulance, and the ambulance is piping in through the sound speakers, and
yeah.
And he just walks in and he's like, "Hey guys," like, but the thing is that the thing that I thought was missing was like this fire, this like, how many times did Moxley kick this guy's head in?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and then he wins the match and he's still getting bullied by these guys. And I wanted that one F it moment, like F this dude.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and just he comes in and is just a ball of fire. But he was the same Hangman. He was the same exact guy who is you know, this whole program is, I think they're trying to, you know, they're trying really hard to get him back to where he was. But still, I'm just not feeling it with this dude. I love this guy in the ring. I so badly want him to succeed because I think he's so talented, but it's just not working.
And there was no excitement to it. Like, he comes out, the music plays, he has a bat with a piece of board with nails sticking out of it, right?
Yeah.
He gets in. I mean, Yuta could have came at him, gut shot, boom, right? I mean, kind of stupid, the nails, because that's you know, like, if you're not going to have him hit me with the nails, like, don't do the nails. Yeah. The board is fine, right? Like, have him come out, gut shot Yuta, Claudio shrugs at him, backdrops Claudio to the top rope. Oh my god, holy shit. Like, and then now he has a Moxley right in his sights. And this is the first time we see Moxley show real cowardice, you know? Yeah. And that, make a statement that, like, this is the first time we've seen Moxley back up. Or maybe you have Moxley get pulled out by Claudio and Yuta, right? And then they bail, right? Like, something exciting like that. And then we gotta do, I'm surprised they're going right back. I get it. The during Don Callis is, you know, want to keep onto his meal ticket, right? But it's just, I thought that was poorly executed too. Like, Omega face down, Don's trying to stop him, and Don just falls back. And I had to watch the replay. He barely touches his ribs, right? Now he's trying to sell that he got hit with the fucking board. Excuse my language. Dude, double over, right? Like, can Mega not notice? Like, you hit him with the board and he's just fine? Like, that, it doesn't make sense. There's no blood. You have nails in that board. There's no blood on this guy. You know, it just was stupid. But we'll see. I think this is Tony Khan's, like, you know, answer to the bloodline. He wants to be this is going to be my answer to the bloodline. Everyone's like, loves the bloodline storyline. This was, he feels that this is what's going to, you know, I'll hold my beer, right? But I, you know, yeah, I don't, well, watch out, Tony. You know, this, you got it.
To me, this is an angle they've been doing. Omega gets hurt, so they can't pay it off. And he just wants to pay, he wants paid off. He, you know, he's got plans of things and stories and thoughts and ideas and creative, and that he just wants to finish through. All right. There's three small ones that I want to go over before we get out of here.
Sure.
FTR and the Guns. I love the Guns. FTR is a great tag team.
Yeah.
The way to get to this match, I thought, was a little hokey. The Guns don't want it. All of a sudden, the champions can decide whether or not who the challengers are, when MJF had no, MJF couldn't decide at all. He had no say in this matter. Three dudes just showed up and said that one of us is going to be the title contender. And then the other thing about this is, of all the things that the Guns would want from these dudes, it's they're going to leave AEW. Like, you just beat these dudes. Why do you care if they're gone? Wouldn't you ask for, like, money? Wouldn't you, like, ask for something else? Like, I don't know. I thought it was silly. I thought it was a little cheesy. It didn't really make a lot of sense to me. It just became a pro wrestling angle to me at this point. And I was really excited for this program, and it didn't get off to a good start for me.
Well, you know, if FTR is more of a thorn in the side of the Guns, or chasing the Guns more, I know they just did a couple things, the pay-per-view and this, I know they beat them. The Guns beat them a while back, but if there was a little more build up to that moment where the Guns are avoiding them, finally, they're like, okay, you mean if we beat you, you guys are gone? we're not to deal with you guys ever again, you know, that kind of deal. But I thought, I want to go back to the quickly to the Guns and Top Flight match. Literally, that match was just done to build up heat for a Top Flight versus Kingdom match at the ROH pay-per-view.
Yeah, it was.
The Guns did not get over, and they could have just cheated to beat the Top Flight. Boom, right? But this whole thing with Kingdom coming out, who just are so wasted on that ROH brand. They should be doing so much more, but they're so wasted here. Just sticking them once again, ROH. They've only been there for 100 fucking years. Let's do something different with them, right? Let's freshen up Dynamite. Let's freshen up AEW's tag team ranks with a very solid tag team in the Kingdom. But no, we got to build up freaking ROH pay-per-view. It did nothing to get the Guns over. Like, get the Guns over. Now you might say, well, they won, John. They didn't get over. We're just, you know, and they had took this team, had to go beat Interfere for them to beat freaking Top Flight. Like, it just, and then, like you said, rushed this whole deal with the stipulation. And, you know, I don't know. I feel like this should be a great program, but it's very rushed. And I don't know if that's truly with FTR's contract situation. I just feel they did resign and they're going to win the belts. And
yeah, I mean, it's they're basing it off of,
yeah,
you know, internet stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And that's why they expect people to buy in on this stuff. All right. Adam Cole returns to do a promo. He's going to have a match with Daniel Garcia next week. Daniel Garcia came out basically saying, you know, I've been here. I've replaced you, all that stuff. I think it's a great opponent for him. I think they're going to have a really good match and good stuff to kind of set Cole up to wherever he's going. It doesn't look like he's going to be the next contender. This is a little bit of a longer play.
I'm guessing Jericho is going to be the next opponent for him, like next program.
That would make sense.
From coming out of this match with Dan Garcia?
That would make sense.
That's what I'm feeling is going to happen with him. So, because Jericho needs something to do. Unless they're... Are they going to be feuding with the... What's the six-man tag team champion's name? What they're called? Not the Dark Order. Malachi Black and those guys.
House of Black.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, what are those guys going to be? Who are they feuding with? Is it going to be Jericho Appreciation Society?
Yeah, that's what it looked like. But, mm-hmm. They haven't said yet. But you know what else? More so than the Roads to the Top reality show, All Access looks like it could be a little interesting. I do want to watch the first episode. I'm not saying I'm going to stick with it. But I liked the stuff that they did around that show for the commercials. I'm intrigued. They have my interest.
I'm gonna check out the first one. But yeah, Adam Cole returns next week. Good for him after that long journey he had, and you know, I think Garcia is a good opponent for him to get his first win back. But I think we gotta quickly talk about last week. We opened the show, Rebar's Mitzvah. Mm-hmm. The four challengers.
Yeah, this is exactly my last topic here for the big picture.
I think no follow-up this week. Darby's in a random six-man tag in the opener. Jungle Boy and Sammy cut promos talking about we'll win matches to build our contenders. Well, they're not even on Rampage on Friday winning matches, right? They can't even advertise them for Dynamite next week yet. Like what the hell? No follow-up to that. And just MGF's just doing a pre-tape promo that he filmed right after the segment. Like, I mean, I thought that was a big misfire.
Okay. I thought the same thing. But because the main thread to this show was Kenny Omega, and like I said, we have 2 months until the actual pay-per-view, I was fine with the focus being off of this program. For that reason, because let's keep the focus on Kenny. Kenny's a story here. He's going to have this match. Kenny's a thread for this show. Now, they should have brought it up a little bit more than they did. Max should have cut a real promo based off of what happened last week, because he was, you know, he had pie on it. He had cake on his face going out. His thing got screwed up. And So he should have had something a little bit longer than the 30-second pre-tape, and we missed like the first 5 seconds because of an audio gaffe and whatever. So I agree with you, but I was fine with them not making it the main focus of the show because of what they were doing at Kenny on that show.
Yeah, I'm not saying it had to be the main. I just think it had to be focused on. It had to be. That's why I'm a little concerned that the MJF title reign will be second to whatever they're going to be doing with this Elite stuff, unless we finally get MJF mixing with the Elite, which I hope they do, because I think that will be interesting.
Well, for the summer. The fact that you put MJF with the Pillars kind of sort of says it's probably not the main focus for this pay-per-view, right? I feel like the main focus is going to be whatever is going on. If they do another Anarchy in the Arena with the Blackpool Combat Club sounds and the like Elite it. And all that, like, I think the MJF match will still be the main event. Mm-hmm. But I do think that they probably feel like they don't have an ace feud to carry that pay-per-view. So thus it may not be as important to the show as maybe other title defenses. They didn't have anyone ready, really, you know. There's no baby faces, and so they're trying to get some ready. But it is a worry of mine as well going into this pay-per-view, because, you know, MJF has been such the big deal of all of these shows, and he did feel a little secondary tonight. Mm-hmm. But we'll see if, because I would hope, like you said, next week it's got to be full-blown MJF and whatever they do. I still want it to be Darby, but doesn't it smell a little bit like a four-way? Like, what do you think about that?
It's going to be a four-way. Yeah, I think so, 100%. We'll see what happens next week, because I think next week Kenny Omega's going to have a big moment in that. It's going to be a big focus on Kenny Omega, the follow-up from this week, right? I think if I remember correctly, I saw online that Jeff Cobb made a challenge is going to be Dynamite.
Yeah, he did.
Right? So you have that going on with Kenny Omega. How does that fit into what they're doing with, you know, the CW network? So we'll see. We'll see what happens. So I think Kenny's going to have another big thing to do on Dynamite. That's all I'm going to say. Yeah. So.
All right. We're going to play the interview that I did with Zach Hadorn about his new book coming out. And you can buy the book if you like. The Indiegogo link is in our show notes. And then John and I will come back and close down the show. All right. Zach Hadorn is joining us. Zach writes for The Torch, and he is also the author of a brand new book that is coming out. It is called Stunning, The Wrestling Artistry of Steve Austin. So no Stone Cold in the title there.
Yeah, no Stone Cold in the title, but for good reason. For good reason. You know, we the book, you know, part of the whole concept of the book is to look at his entire career, to see it evolve from the days of, you know, Stunning Steve Austin, and even before that, up through Stone Cold. So yeah, not an accident that Stone Cold is off the title, but I assure you, plenty of Stone Cold stuff in the book itself. Yeah,
there you go. Okay, so I'm always fascinated when people write books, because everyone who's ever written a book has said it is such a long and laborious process, and you can't wait until you finish. But then there's always sort of an inclination to write a second one. And that just is wild to me. Like, there's this long process and you can't wait to finish. And then when you get done, you're like, oh, what am I going to write again? Like, how was the whole process for you?
Yeah, very, very similar. Very similar. Like, I found the process to be like, it had its ups and like peaks and valleys, you know, it had its peaks and valleys. Just it was a kind of an interesting grind in that way, because there's some days where you're just rolling and you're just like, oh, this is good. And you know what you want to say and you know how you want to say it. And then there's other days where, you know, you got to write and it's like, you just can't, you can't find the words at all. So you can't get them out of your brain and onto the page. So I certainly experienced all of that. And I also experienced the notion of, wanting to be done. But also, and recently I kind of was able to kind of get this, but it's available for pre-order, and having that happen was a really, like, it's just a fun day to, like, finally let people know about, hey, where they can find this thing and what I've been up to. And, hearing people comment about, like, Steve Austin being their favorite wrestler and really excited to read it, like, it made you forget quickly all the all the kind of, again, the ups and downs of actually writing the book. And the other fun part about this project for me in doing it wasn't just the writing, it was also the watching, because I watched just countless hours and countless matches, countless promos from Steve Austin from the very beginning. So from 1990, when he first started out in USWA, all the way up until, he had his match against Kevin Owens at WrestleMania last year. So there was a lot to watch, and that was just, that was a blast. And there was analysis that went along with it, of course, but this process of writing the book wasn't just writing. There was a watching element.
Yeah.
To it.
Yeah. So. At the research, it seemed, yeah. The research is always fun, 'cause that's kind of where the genesis of the idea comes from. So the process of this book, I know you have two kids. Yeah. Were you writing at home? Were you going to Starbucks for a couple hours? Like, how was the process of actually getting, your fingers on the keyboard?
Man, I was writing at home. It was like during I don't want to say like depths of the pandemic, because it was kind of like I started writing the book in the spring of 2021. Okay. It's not 2020 pandemic, but still, like, in the middle of everything. So I was at home writing it. And it's a late nights is what I is what it turned out to be for me. Like, I wasn't really able to, to get time, like, during the day to write, but at night I was able to, and that's kind of when I did the most of it. It's a funny story. So I started writing the book in March of 2021. In April of 2021, we had our second daughter, and I have
timing there, brother.
What's that?
The good timing there, brother.
Yeah, right. But I have this, like, fun memory of, like, it being, because you have a very, very young infant baby, you're up all hours of the day. And I have a vivid memory of, during that first month of her life, it being 2-3 in the morning, she's in one arm, I got the remote in the other arm, and there's Steve Austin matches on the TV. And so, it's obviously, she's not going to remember that, but I will. And so that was part of it. And so when I say all hours of the day, like, it truly was like an all hour endeavor.
And what she will not realize when she's a little bit older is that every time she hears Stone Cold Steve Austin's voice, she's going to get a little tired there.
Yes. Right. Right. Yes. Yes. She'll, she'll be able to deliver a stunner just a little bit better than other people her age. Yeah. Yeah.
So the role of the independent publisher here, you're doing this through Indiegogo, but the what is it, Hybrid Shoot? Is that who you're actually publishing the book through?
Yes, that's correct. Hybrid Shoot was the publishing partner on this, and Jonathan Snowden. I can't speak highly enough of him and them as an organization. Like, he just provided, like, the perfect balance of support for the project and support for the vision that I had for it, but also the experience of, well, you know, we know we know what's going to work and what could help you. When I started the kind of the process of pitching the book, I had like a broad kind of, let's write a book about the artistry of wrestling.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
man, am I glad I didn't go down that road, because it is a, I mean, you know, that could be 50,000 pages probably. Yeah. Like there's so many different elements to that. And, you know, so to kind of get on the same page with them and have them say, no wait, hey, we're really interested in this idea, but how can we get it a little bit more focused? That's where the idea came in about, well, let's focus on one act or one like person's career and see how that goes. And so, and that's what we did with Steve Austin. So they were always there to like bounce ideas off of, and they, I mean, you know, they've taken care of the promotion and just kind of getting behind the project. So that's why I say, like, you know, if you're out there and you're wondering like, oh, should I part with the $7, you know, like you're getting I think you're getting a great book for sure.
Yeah.
But more than that too, you really are supporting like independent publishing and the ability for, you know, people to just create, you know, and that I think matters a lot. And I have a even more of an appreciation for that after going through this with Hybrid Shoot.
I mean, if anybody knows how to do this still to this day, it's Snowden. The Ken Shamrock book was awesome. And, you know, we have this funny story in doing an interview with him. So Dave and I interviewed him when the book was out. And I guess Dave had blocked him on Twitter at some point. And so he's like, yeah, you know, but Dave, you know, you still have me blocked on Twitter, but I'm glad that, you know, you have me on your show. And Dave's like, yeah, 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 ha, 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 ha. And then Dave still has him blocked on Twitter.
Still has him blocked.
And, yeah, and, you know, well, Snowden's Twitter personas, you know, it's kind of interesting. I could see why maybe he would have frustrated Dave, but that doesn't take away from the fact that he's a tremendous writer, especially when it comes to this genre. And I know he's, you know, I first remember, I think most everyone remembers him as a MMA author, I think Total MMA and the books, and then, you know, crossing over to pro wrestling stuff. So it's really cool that you were able to sync up with him, because again, he's the one who has shown the way on how to do this. So as far as we'll get into the book here in a second, but I want to explain sort of the details of the Indiegogo process, and we'll have the link in the show notes. And if anybody is interested, I am going to buy a copy either for myself, or if there are listeners who are interested, I will buy one for a listener. Just shoot me an email, gg@fightgamemedia.com, and just list your favorite Stone Cold Steve Austin match. And if there's multiple people who want this book, I'll figure out a way to, you know, to do that, or maybe give away more than one or whatever. So definitely shoot me an email if you're interested in Zach's book here. But like the process of going through the funding and all of that stuff, and then the output, like, this is the early stages of this. Will the book also be available elsewhere after you kind of go through this process? How does this work?
Yeah, it sure will. It sure will. So we launched the pre-orders for the book on 316 Day, of course. I mean, it's a Steve Austin book. Like, that only makes sense, right?
Hell yeah.
So that was last week. And so pre-orders are available now for about a month. So about 22 more days, I think. The book's available at a discounted price right now. It's about, it's like 30% off for a digital copy. And then 20% off for a paperback copy. And, so that, you know, it just kind of is our first wave of launching the book. So this is the only place you can get the book right now. It will print over the summer. And so it'll be in everybody's hands sometime in July. And then at that point, it will be available elsewhere too. It'll be available, you know, on Amazon and really wherever books are sold. So the second wave kind of comes in the summer when the Amazon availability begins. But this is a good way to you know, again, we wanted to launch it in waves. We wanted to create a little bit of excitement. We wanted to coincide with 316 Day and kind of announce during what is a busy wrestling or the busy time of year for
right.
professional wrestling around WrestleMania. Yeah. So that's why we kind of have the two waves going. But so you can get your pre-order copy now. If for some reason you don't and you want to get it later, of course, that will be that avenue will be available to you. But
the fun is in supporting it in the beginning and knowing about it in the beginning, supporting the project. And then you get a little bit of a relationship with Hybrid Shoot, with Zach, with Snowden, I'm sure. So, I mean, this is at some point, maybe this happens. Maybe, you know, somebody who knows somebody who knows Austin. We're going to sneak a copy into Austin's hands, man.
Going to sneak a copy into his hand. Got to do it. Got to do it. It's my mission. It's my mission now. And, you know, yeah, there's enough. Hey, there's enough people that, you know, have relationships and different networking webs at this point that are involved in the project. Wade Keller, who, you know, obviously is the founder and publisher of PW Torch, which is where I work. You know, he kindly wrote the foreword of the book and has, you know, obviously a tremendous, like a good relationship with Steve. And,
yeah,
you know, so yes, that is a mission. That'd be very cool. It'd be, yeah, it'd be cool to just to get it in his hands and know, all right, who knows if he'll read it, but he has a copy. He has a copy if he wants one.
All right, let's get into the nuts and bolts of why you decided to write. Obviously, Stone Cold Steve Austin is a fantastic subject matter. You went all the way into the beginning of the career, and he's, you know, he also has a lot of information about that part of it. There's so many documentaries about him. He had a podcast where he explains all that stuff. So when it comes to Austin, was there anything in your research that you found that you didn't know? Because I mean, we know so much about Steve because he like, I think it was even in the intro and the video of your book, like he's like the most, you know, I don't know the word that you use, famous or whatever, but yeah, like he's out there. Was there anything that you found that you're like, oh, I didn't actually know this thing about him?
So, you know, in terms of like kind of the facts of his career and like, you know, the pieces of his career, not really, because like you said, like that's pretty well documented.
Yeah.
What I was like kind of amazed with, but also really happy to find as I was writing the book, was the evolution of Steve Austin. The fact that there are things that he was doing from a performance standpoint and from a wrestling standpoint in 1990 in front of, you know, people in the Dallas Sportatorium for the USWA that still found its way into the Stone Cold Steve Austin character that's in front of 60,000 in the Astrodome when he's wrestling The Rock. And like, that wasn't something that I went in trying to find. Like, I went into the project going, all right, I'm just going to look at his career and look at his matches and analyze what I see. And it was really cool to kind of have this arc of his career to kind of like look back on, because it is very much an evolution. It's not like there's some things that he did with the Hollywood Blondes, like this thing that he's not breaking out again.
Right.
Steve Austin. But there's little nuances to the game. How he interacts with a crowd in particular is always present and always growing and always getting better and always getting is and always changing from that, since he was a rookie in 1990 to the Kevin Owens match. Like, it's present there. So that was the most fascinating thing for me, like, was watching the evolution of that and see him use it in better ways and manipulate the audience with those skills that he just kind of kept tweaking and changing throughout. And that's when my kind of like jaw hit the floor and I was like, wow, like this is really cool. Like, cause I didn't set out to find that, but it's there. And when you guys read the book, like you'll see it too. And I think it'll make you look at Steve Austin as a wrestler, maybe even differently, to like really appreciate like the art of his game. Of course he's popular. Of course he drew a lot of money. Of course, you know, those pops are there. But the what we were able to do with the book is really kind of pull back the layers as to like why that was able to happen. And you can see the foundation of it way back when he first starts, when you read this. And that was the most fascinating part of kind of looking back at the career.
So I remember Steve Austin, and I'm a little bit older than you, from Pro Wrestling Illustrated. There was a definite, like, they saw something in him as someone to, you know, post pictures about and write about. And it was really my first sort of understanding of how the magazines were used in, hey, we want you to write about this guy. He's kind of up and coming. And so from the get-go of when I was reading that magazine, I knew all kinds of things about him, even though I didn't really get to see him wrestle that much. I think there was some stuff on ESPN yep. for early in his career. But and for me, when I saw him show up in WCW, to have all of that knowledge of his career but not really see his work, it was one of the great, like, oh my God, I can't believe Steve Austin's coming to WCW. Like, and then you tell your friends and they're like, yeah, who's Steve Austin? And you kind of feel a little bit connected to the yeah. business, right? And that's kind of how my relationship with wrestling would just continue to evolve, is just to get closer and closer. But back then, like, he was the blue chipper. Like, he was the guy that people thought, okay, this is the next coming of the Nature Boy Ric Flair, or whomever you wanted to use as your archetype for pro wrestling. Did you sense that in your research of how big people thought this guy was going to be? But, and he did become big, but it was in a way different way than people originally thought.
It really was. It really was. And yeah, you can see it in two ways. One being, you know, when he started his career, like in the USWA, you know, he had a really big feud right out of the gate, like early in his career, with Gentleman Chris Adams, mm-hmm. which was his trainer. And that, like, that just doesn't happen all the time, where you like get that kind of focus as a rookie, essentially. But like, and Steve Austin says, and we comment on it in the book, that, like, you know, Chris Adams saw something in him and took him along the way. But they had a handful of different matches, many of which we talk about specifically in the book, including like a barbed wire match.
Oh wow, and I didn't know
so
that.
So you can see like the fact that, yeah, he's getting attention like early on, and it's not long into his career where he's getting the opportunity to go to WCW. So that's another thing that tells you, like, okay, you know, yeah, he didn't have a main event run in WCW right away, but they saw something in him early enough to, you know, give him that opportunity soon in his career. And so, yeah, he definitely was put in positions, I think, to kind of find himself on a bigger stage early on, because of kind of that, I think, that instinct that people saw of, like, yeah, this guy has something. The other thing that is without question there early is the connection with the crowd as a heel, especially early on. Like, he works that crowd constantly. Like, when you watch his matches early on, he's wrestling Chris Adams, and, you know, he's constantly checking in with the crowd, working the crowd, facial expressions, running them down, like, and they're connecting back and forth. Same thing with Stunning Steve Austin in WCW early in the run. That audience reaction is always there. The only time where he doesn't kind of, he's not pulling the reaction that he wants from the audience throughout his career is as the ringmaster, you know, and kind of maybe late in his Stunning Steve run, it starts to fade a little bit. But other than that, like, he is always in tune with the audience, and they're in tune back with him. And I think if you're a wrestling promoter, or you're somebody running a company, like, that stands out in a big way, to get that reaction all the time. And he had it. And then, of course, as Stone Cold, he really had it.
I think The thing that I like when I was watching him in WCW, my thought was, this guy's really great. He's a really good wrestler. But for whatever reason, and I'm sure politics are involved, yep. He never really got that last little push to the top that was sort of like it was almost like that was just going to be the trajectory of his career. Was starting TV title, then US title, tag team champion. And then eventually he's just going to get there. Like, that's what it seemed like when he was brought into WCW, and he never did get there. And then Bischoff comes in and changes completely the trajectory of his career. But when you're watching the stuff from WCW, do you get that sense? Or is that just me like thinking like, wow, this guy is, you know, because of how I remember reading about him, you know, that's why I thought that. And it wasn't really the layout of his career.
No, it was. It definitely was. I mean, and he's brought in early in his WCW run. Like, he's winning the TV title. He spends time in that division, I guess you could say. The United States title is next. He moves on. He does the thing with the Hollywood Blondes, back into the United States title picture after that. And that's where it kind of stalls out, though, like, for as far as WCW goes. Like, so he was on kind of that path, and eventually he kind of just stayed on that path, and it got pretty stagnant. And really, you can kind of feel that when you watch the stuff. You can feel that, like, okay, he's on this upward trajectory, he's got some momentum, Hollywood Blondes hits, and then he gets even more, he kind of takes two steps back, but then eventually gets four steps forward with Brian Pillman. But then it kind of like that just kind of all of a sudden stops and goes away. He's back doing the Stunning Steve thing. And it really at that point feels like a very tried gimmick that's there, but it's not really doing anything. So you can see it on the rise, and then you can see it stall, like when you watch everything back. And it's it makes you you look back and you go, well, how could they not see, like, yeah, that this is there? But in reality, like, you know, it's not like they had the Stone Cold character and kicked it to the side. Like, he wasn't that guy
right
yet. That, like, I feel like the stagnation of that character in WCW, really, it was a step to the Steve Austin thing. You wouldn't know it at the time, or the Stone Cold thing. You wouldn't know it at the time, but it absolutely played a part in him finding that character down the road.
John and I, on the Patreon, for the last 2 years, we went through all the Raws from 97 and 98. So we watched character weekly just get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And I think the thing that I was most surprised about was, and this is back then as well, but when you see Austin in WCW, you know, especially I just have this fond memory of like 91, 92 Austin of being like that guy. And then you fast forward to 97 and the fact that he is so good on the microphone, you would have never really suspected that. He always had a valet or he had a manager, and he never really cut loose on the promos like he did in WWF at the time. So when, like, I'm sure he sort of has described it, if I'm thinking back, as like he just didn't have the chance and it was sort of always in him. But it was kind of like the fact that he was held back in WCW, like there was all of this, like, I need to show you that I'm really great at this thing. And then that channels into Stone Cold Steve Austin. Like, were there moments in WCW where he actually was cutting promos? And I just don't remember, because the drastic difference in, you know, late 96 of WWE or mid 96 of WWE, that you're like, wow, where has this guy been?
Yeah. I mean, there are definitely promos out there early in his career that I think stand out. Some of the stuff that he did, even early in his career when he's going up against Chris Adams in that kind of feud, like, there's some good mic work there. It's not polished like the Steve Austin, like the Stone Cold mic work. But again, the confidence and the attitude and the kind of the crowd control, that is there early. You can see that. And like the words aren't always there, and like there's misses for sure too. But those three elements like are there from the beginning. They're also there as Stunning Steve. I think he finds another level on the microphone when he's working with Brian Pillman in the Hollywood Blondes. Like Pillman, and I talk about this in the book, Pillman really drew a lot, another side of him out where, and I don't think it wasn't something that was like that you felt was scared to come out or anything, but it just needed somebody to play off of in a more kind of grandiose Brian Pillman kind of way. And Pillman was able to bring that out of him. So you saw like during the Hollywood Blondes, a little more edge to his promos, a little more, him be a little more boisterous, a little louder. And so he found like another layer there. And then of course, like the story that we've heard over and over again, the move to WC or ECW and the opportunity there to really A, cut loose without any kind of restrictions, and B, you know, he has the history of what happened to him in WCW as ammunition. And that's where you really see it like come together. And it's like, you know, everybody talks about it. In the book, we really dive in and examine what it is about those promos that really were striking, and why it was the kind of the essence of the Steve Austin character that's born right there. Because it really was, it really was in a lot of ways. So I don't think it's something where, I mean, it is opportunity, right? Like you got to be good on the microphone. You have to be given the opportunities to do it. I think he had opportunities, but the context around them was different at times throughout his career. Mm-hmm. But just like everything else, you see that development and you see him grow and build and get better and better, and then put it all together as Stone Cold.
So let's fast forward to last year's WrestleMania. That moment was so amazing to me. Now, I was at the Houston WrestleMania, which was 25.
Okay.
And he was inducted in the Hall of Fame. I got to hear the glass break one more time. He drove his little four-wheeler into the ring and saluted the crowd. The Hall of Fame thing wasn't as that good because they sped him up really quickly. But that moment, I was like, okay, if I never see this guy wrestle ever again, that's the moment where I go, I'm comfortable, I'm good. I saw it in 25. Yeah. And we would see through the years, he would come back and be the referee at WrestleMania, do the stuff with Hogan and Rock at WrestleMania 30. And to think that in 2022, we get to see Stone Cold Steve Austin have an actual wrestling match for the first time in 20 years, almost 20 years. I was just like, I was so worried for one, so scared because, you know, he obviously, there was a reason why he retired.
Right.
But to see him go out, the artistry that you're talking about, and some people will say, well, all he did is just punch and kick and like, but it's more about the crowd and his relationship to the crowd and him with Kevin Owens and him trusting Kevin Owens to be there and to not hurt him and all of those things. And man, that was like, okay, that was the great swan song. And who knows, maybe we'll see him again. But I was so fascinated by that match and that moment. And at my heart, like, you know, very rarely, because of how we kind of cover wrestling today, very rarely do I just get to sort of sit back and have that relationship with wrestling like I did when I was a little kid. And that was one of those moments where I was like, okay, this is Austin. This is my guy. It's a nice swan song to the book, I imagine, in how you were thinking about writing it. Like, no better ending than what happened last year at WrestleMania.
It was, I mean, yeah, you couldn't have said it any better, man. Like, I'm sitting here and I'm watching this and I'm going, man, like, and it's funny, I had already turned the book in before that happened. Like the first draft of the book before that all went down at WrestleMania, even before like he was announced to have this segment at WrestleMania. So I had it in the back of my mind, like, because, you know, just like his career, right? The book kind of just ends.
Right.
Like, you know, he's got the match at WrestleMania 19 and it's just like it kind of chops. You know, I talk about kind of the stuff that he did as the sheriff and the GM, but we don't go into it this exact same way as we did his wrestling career. So the wrestling career just, I mean, it is just cut short. There's no real prep for it or build towards it. Its end. It just ends. When it was a little awkward when I was writing it, cause I remember I'm writing the last bit and I'm like, I guess we're done. And, so when they announced this Kevin Owens show segment, and then the rumors started popping up, like, okay, you know, Steve Austin's going to have another match at WrestleMania. I was like, oh boy, like perfect. Like, that's great. I can add I can add this on. And then sure enough, man, like it was a nice swan song and a way to tie up his career. If we never see him again, I think he had a performance, and not just a performance, but a reaction to his performance that is worthy of the legend of Steve Austin. I mean, you go and you watch that. I mean, seriously, I encourage people, watch that match back, and you can see kind of what I'm trying to talk about here, and what I talk a lot about in the book, is just the control that he has over that crowd. And the fact that he's constantly checking in with them, making sure that they're with him. And it's not like he's obviously not turning them and asking them, but just little pieces of his game to make sure that they're there. And man, it's all over that match. It is all over that match. And the, you know, the character is all over that match too. Would you really wanted to see Steve Austin versus Kevin Owens in like a, you know, like a Matt classic? Like, yeah, I don't think so. Like, you need the brawl. You need the brawl. You need it all over the arena. That's, you know, that's part of Steve Austin. And so you really, what it was cool about like adding that to the book was that it, you know, even whatever it was it 18 years later or 19 years later or something? Yeah. Like, he's still like, that's still a foundational part of what he brings to the wrestling ring when he's in it. And it fits so well. So I'm so grateful that they had that. And as much as I want to see Steve Austin do something else in the ring, I'm kind of like, oh, but don't though. Not until it comes out.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Totally. All right. So where can people find you and anything else you want to plug about the book? Like I said, we'll have the link to the Indiegogo website and the book in the show notes.
Yes. If you follow me on Twitter at Zehedorn Torch, Zehedorn Torch. I'd appreciate the following, and you can find all the work that I do there on a regular basis. But at the top of the page, there's a link to the pre-orders of the book as well. Guys, you know, obviously I'd appreciate the support, but I really think you're getting like a really cool project, whether you're a Steve Austin fan or not. Like, I think this is a really interesting professional wrestling book, and something that's more than just, okay, here's the story of Steve Austin, but it's very much peeling back the layers of the artistry of his matches and of his promos and of his segments. And I hope that it gives people like just another fun way to watch wrestling and another fun way to watch Steve Austin wrestle. So if you have, you know, the ability, please, there's copies, ebook copies, there's paperback copies. Pre-order now and you get a really nice discount on it. Help out an independent publisher that's doing some really great work so that they can keep doing that great work. And again, I think you're getting a product that you'll really enjoy when you're finished with it. So I very much appreciate it. Once again, it's at Zehedorn Torch to find that link.
We very much support content creators. It is a giant passion project. Hopefully you will, you will do good with this book, but the reason why you do it isn't because of dreams of hundreds of thousands of dollars. No. It's because there, it's a passion project for you, and you really you're passionate about wrestling. You're passionate about the subject, and I'm sure writing a book has always been kind of on your bucket list. So congratulations on everything, and check Zach out on Twitter.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much. And thank you so much for having me. I love the show, and it's an honor to be on it.
All right, John, we are going to wrap up this week. You know, what I realized is Crystal has never taken her kids to Disneyland before.
We haven't either yet.
Really?
No, not yet.
My two boys, they probably got sick of Disneyland. We went like the first 5 or 6 years of their life every year. So in a couple, I think it's actually about 3 weeks, I'm going to be gone, but I'm bringing the microphone. I'm going to be recording from SoCal. I'm going to wait till everyone goes to sleep, and we'll still be able to do this show. But I just realized that as I was looking at the vacation schedule, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to do another podcast where I'm not in the house. So as long as the internet is fine, I'm just crossing my fingers for the internet. But all right. So next week is WrestleMania week. We're going to preview the stuff on WrestleMania. We didn't focus on it today, but Cody has a dream, man. Cody has a dream. And
hey, you know what? He couldn't help everyone with the racism in AEW. At least he brought back, you know, Sammy and Kenny, Kevin Owens get it. So he accomplished something.
All right. So we'll be back next week talking WrestleMania, leading up to the big show that weekend, and also what happens in AEW. So for John, I'm Double G, and thanks to Zach Haydorn for doing the segment with us. Peace out.